sitting with its back against one of the stalagmites, was a creature Blue had never seen in any animal studies in school. It looked a little bit like a monkey, but bigger, and not quite so hairy, apart from a patch of floppy brown fur on top of its head. It had nimble little paws, which were holding something that it was gazing at intently. Parts of it were wrapped in something like a cocoon made of jaguar fur and deep red silk. At first, it didn't notice the three dragons emerging from the tunnel. It was too immersed in whatever it was looking at. Blue and Cricket exchanged wondering glances. She looked as bewildered as he felt, but also enchanted. Then Blue stepped on a rock that turned under his talons, and he lurched forward with a small splash. The creature's head popped up, and its eyes, as brown and big in its face as Cricket's, went wide. It jumped to its feet, revealing that it stood on two paws instead of four, dropped whatever it had been looking at, and drew a long knife from its cocoon. Blue and his friends stopped and stared at it. It stared at them. "What is it thinking?" Blue wondered. "Can it think? What does it know about dragons? Is it just scared, or is it having other emotions? What a sweet little face it has, like a marmoset. But I've never seen a monkey with a knife before." Sometimes a monkey wandered up into the webs by accident, long black spidery limbs racing up the high vines and out onto the silvery bridges. Blue remembered one that Io had played with for an entire day. She'd wanted to keep it, but her parents made her take it back to the savanna and release it. They told her that if the hive wings found it, they might eat it, and that would be much more upsetting. It was hard to argue with that. This monkey's limbs seemed the wrong shape for climbing vines or swinging from trees, and its coiled energy was more like a panther's, poised to spring at them. "Do you really think it's going to try stabbing us with that thing?" Cricket whispered. Her voice broke the spell. The creature spun around and fled between the stalagmites, disappearing through a crack in the wall behind it. "Oh no!" Cricket cried. "Wait, come back!" She floundered through the water up onto the shore and scrambled after the little animal, but the crack was too small for a dragon to fit through. She crouched beside the opening, trying to peek inside. "I promise we won't hurt you, little monkey. What are you? Please come back."
"That was really cute," Blue said.
He waded onto the shore, carefully skirting the fire so he wouldn't accidentally put it out. After the darkness of the previous caves, it was nice to be able to see, and much warmer near the fire than in the lake.
"I thought it was freaky," Swordtail said. "Weird little thing. Did you see how it was looking at us? It was... I don't..."
He interrupted himself with an absolutely enormous yawn. "I really want to know what it was," Cricket said, stamping one foot with frustration. "I thought I'd studied all the flora and fauna around here, even the prehistoric stuff. I don't remember any pictures that looked like that." She tipped her head up, staring into space as though she was flipping through pages in her mind. "Not a gorilla. Not an orangutan. Not a chimpanzee. What in the hive?" Blue picked up the object the creature had been looking at.
"Oh, wow. Cricket, check this out."
She wound her way back through the stalagmites toward him. He turned the thing over in his claws. The outside was flexible leather. The inside was many layers of smooth, beaten paper, and there were little marks all over each page.
"What?"
Cricket said, astonished. She took it from him and flipped through it gently.
"Is this a book?"
"It can be. Monkeys can't write books or read them."
"It's not a dragon book. It didn't come from a hive," Blue pointed out. "Look how tiny it is."
"A dollhouse book?"
Cricket tried.
"Which the monkey found somewhere?"
She shook her head. "No, you're right. This is the monkey's book. When we came in, I thought its expression looked familiar. And that's because it was reading."
She hugged the book to her chest. Mystery animals in a cave under the savannah? Who can read? Blue, this is the biggest scientific discovery of our lifetime. I wouldn't have to be a gardener if I told the queen about this. I'm sure she'd let me change disciplines so I could study them, don't you think?
I'm a little worried she'd have them all rounded up and eaten, Blue admitted.
Cricket looked horrified. No way. Is that really what you think of hive wings? That because we eat meat, we're heartless monsters? Do all silkwings think that?
Blue said. I mean, I wouldn't have said heartless, but eating animals does seem kind of unnecessary.
Cricket frowned and rubbed her head, as though she'd never spent any time thinking about whether eating animals was necessary.
We don't eat everything, she said after a while. We don't eat lizards or snakes, since they're probably related to us, and I'm sure nobody would eat a species that can read and write and might be as smart as we are.
A loud rumbling sound broke into their conversation before Blue could answer. They both spun around in fright and discovered that it was the sound of Swordtail snoring. The handsome silkwing was passed out by the fire. Wings flopped across the stone as though he'd staggered out of the water and collapsed in the first dry place he found.
Well, that makes sense, Blue said. He did carry me halfway across the savannah. He probably needs to sleep for a week to recover.
He caught himself. It was only a joke. But who knew what would happen to Swordtail as the stimulant wore off? They couldn't afford to have Swordtail sleep for a week. They needed to get to Luna as soon as possible, before she emerged from her cocoon all alone.
Do you want to sleep too? Cricket asked. I can keep an eye out, in case any hive wings come all the way down into the cave, find a passage, and follow it through to here. Which, I don't think they will.
No, you should sleep. And I'll take first watch, Blue said. You were flying all night, too.
He could easily imagine how tired her wings must be. If he were in her scales, he knew he'd be feeling very anxious and emotional as well, given the stress of running away from her own tribe and upending her safe hive-wing life. Surely even the excitement of discovering a new intelligent species couldn't outweigh the danger she'd put herself in.
Which she did for me, to help me.
All right, Cricket said with a yawn. If you're really sure, I wouldn't mind sleeping a little bit.
Of course.
He watched her stretch her wings and curl up on the rock, close enough for him to touch her talons if he needed to wake her. Her orange-gold scales rose and fell, slower and slower as she drifted off to sleep. The firelight flickered little shadows across her back, as though the inkblot splatter patterns were spreading and shrinking and dancing.
Maybe she's not as scared as I would be, he thought. Maybe for her, finding out new things is enough to drive out her fear. Maybe this feels like an adventure to her.
But that was hard for him to imagine, especially when he pictured the army of mind-controlled hive wings far above them, combing the grasslands stalk by stalk. Who wouldn't be afraid of that? Maybe Swordtail, his best and bravest friend. He was a dragon who'd faced that entire army to save Luna or Blue. His courage had always seemed foolish and dangerous and impulsive to Blue. But now he wished he had even a tenth of it himself. He lay down with his chin on his front talons and thought about everyone who'd become entangled in this web. Io, who could be anywhere right now. Burnett and Silverspot, alone and worrying about their children. Katie did, wondering where her sister was. All the hive wings who were being forced to hunt for him, whether they understood why or not. And somewhere in the center of that web, Queen Wasp, stealing the flame silks and using her subjects like puppets. Was she angry right now? Or coldly certain that she'd find him soon? At least Luna was unaware of all this. Somewhere deep in her cocoon, she was asleep, growing her wings in peace. She had no idea what kind of chaos her metamorphosis had set off, or what strange new prison she was going to wake up in.
"I'm coming, Luna," he thought fiercely. "Sortel and I will find you. You're not going to wake up alone. I promise."
Chapter 15. Blue stood at the bottom of the sinkhole, looking up. He could just barely see the glow of moonlight reflecting off some of the rocks far overhead. His tail flicked a damp patch of moss on one of the rocks, and he shivered.
"Do you think it's safe to go up?" Cricket asked.
"Hive wings prefer to hunt by day," Sortel pointed out. "Their night vision is poor, and they're lazy and arrogant, so I'm sure they're at home asleep, confident they'll catch us tomorrow."
Cricket blinked at him, looking slightly hurt.
"I'm not at home asleep," she observed.
"Right," Blue said. "That's not fair, Swordtail. They're not all lazy and arrogant. They're dragons, just like you and me and everyone we know. Some bad and some good. Dragons who've stolen your sister and spent the last day hunting you, so they can throw you in their secret prison too," Swordtail said sharply. "That's Queen Wasp making them do that," Blue said. "They're not all like her." "So what? They let her be like that and never complain or speak up, because it means they get to be comfortable," Sortel said. "Sorry, Blue. I'm not in the mood to feel sorry for the bad guys right now."
He spread his wings and launched himself up the shaft.
"I'll go check if the coast is clear."
Blue sighed as Sortel flew away. The strange, frenetic energy of the stimulant had worn off, and after sleeping almost the entire day, Sortel had woken up pretty much his normal self again, which was great, except for how his normal self could sometimes be a big, honking rhinoceros trampling over everyone else's feelings.
"I'm sorry," he said to Cricket.
"Don't be," she said. "He's right. I never worried about how we treat silkwings or what happens to flame silks before."
"Neither did I, really," Blue admitted.
"But you're helping us now. You're not like the others."
"If Queen Wasp could control my mind, I probably would be," she said. "It's just luck, or some kind of mystery science that it doesn't work on me."
Sortel swooped back down toward them.
"All quiet, as far as I can see and hear," he said. "If we fly now, we should make it to Wasp Hive before morning."
"And then what?" Cricket asked.
"Then we figure something else out," he said. "That sounds like a Swordtail kind of plan," Blue thought.
But he didn't have anything better to offer, so he kept quiet. Swordtail spun a harness around Blue again and braced his forearms around Blue's chest.
"All right," he said. "Off we..."
He vaulted into the air and immediately lost his balance, smacking into the side of the canyon and thudding to the ground again. Blue's claws barked painfully against the stone, and he yelped.
"Oof,"
Sortel grunted.
"Sorry, let me just..."
He braced his legs and shoved himself aloft again, clutching Blue even more tightly. No luck. Blue could feel himself slipping, even with the harness, and Sortel's muscles were clearly straining to hold him. His wings beat as hard as he could, but a moment later, he had to drop back down.
"Uh-oh," Cricket said, hovering above them. Blue glanced up at the far, far distant top of the hole again.
"Uh-oh" was a bit of an understatement. Sortel sliced away the silk connecting them and crouched, gasping for breath.
"If you can't carry him anymore," Cricket said, "how are we going to get Blue out of this cave?"
"I don't understand why I can't," Sortel protested. "I carried him all day yesterday, and it was no trouble at all."
He flexed his arms and winced.
"I guess I do feel a little sore now."
"It was the stimulant," Cricket said. "It made you stronger and gave you energy, but only until it wore off."
"That is so interesting. I wonder if anyone has any idea that it has that effect on dragons, or if other scientists have only ever used it on plants. Her eyes went a little dreamy. Maybe for the science fair next year?
Do you have any more of it?
Sortel asked, eyeing the pouch tied around her chest. She shook her head. No. And I wouldn't suggest taking it from a normal state, she said. Not without some dilution experiments and animal studies first. I mean, you started off completely paralyzed, and look what it did to you.
What did I say? Sortel asked. Did I sound like a total idiot?
You were fine,
Blue assured him.
It was adorable.
Oh, good, Sortel grumbled. Adorable is just the look I was going for on our heroic mission.
So what else can we do? Cricket said, studying the rocks around them. Blue, could you climb out?
Of course, Sortel answered for him. Silkwings are all great climbers.
Well, maybe, but all that way? Blue said, his courage failing. I mean, I don't mind the climbing part, but the maybe falling part, and the very long way to fall, and the certain death if I fall part, those I'm kind of less excited about.
Plus, there's no way he'll make it to the top before morning, Sortel said. And then what do we do? Climb back down? Risk the open savanna again?
There might be another option. Hang on, Cricket said. She spread her wings and flew away, up and up till Blue could hardly see the shimmer of her sunlight-colored scales. He had a horrible moment of imagining that she might not come back, that she'd reach the top, realize she could just go home, and leave them and all their messy, troublesome danger behind.
Blue,
Sortel said in a low voice. Blue glanced at him and saw pity in his friend's dark blue eyes.
Remember how you warned me once about falling in love with Luna?
Sortel said, folding his wings back.
You said we might not be partnered together. You said it would be better for both of us if we could wait to fall in love until we knew who our partners would be.
Blue looked down at his claws. That felt like a very foolish thing to say now. As though a dragon could inject a nerve toxin into his feelings and leave them paralyzed until they might be usable. But he'd imagined how Luna and Swordtail would feel if Queen Wasp separated them, and it had been so awful. He'd been trying to protect them from that.
This is much worse, Blue, Sortel said. She's a hive wing. You can never, never be with her. You should tell her to go home now, before it's too hard to say goodbye.
I think it already is, Blue said softly.
At least for me.
Sortel put one wing over Blue's back and rested his head against Blue's.
I was afraid of that, he said.
Cricket came swooping back down in a flapping of wings and landed on an outcropping a little ways above them. There's a crevice near the top, she said. It's not very big, but I think Blue could hide in it. If we can get him to it by morning, he could wait out the day there, and then we'd keep going to Wasp Hive tomorrow night. Blue felt the tension ripple through Swordtail's body. He knew what he was feeling. Another day's delay, a whole night wasted on one wingless dragon climbing out of a hole, when Luna was out there and needed their help now.
You can go on without me, if you'd rather, he said to Sortail.
He could see that Sortail was tempted. After all, what use was Blue going to be in a rescue anyway? He couldn't exactly fight, and if they had to escape in a hurry, he would massively slow them down. No, don't do that, Cricket said. I was hoping you'd use your silk to help Blue climb out. She pointed up. To catch him if he falls.
Oh,
Swordtail said, light dawning in his eyes as he saw what she meant.
Of course, that's a good idea. Cricket is full of good ideas, Blue said.
She ducked her head and smiled at him, and he felt his heart explode.
Definitely too late. I can't say goodbye to her. Even if it means it'll hurt more later, I still want to be with her for as long as I can.
All right, let's try this,
Sortel said, again shooting silk from his wrists. This time the thicker, stronger strands that were usually used for building web bridges. He wound it around Blue, leaving his limbs free to climb, then leaped up to the ledge above Cricket, still holding the other end of the silk.
Go ahead, he called.
All right, this is happening, Blue thought.
He sent up a silent prayer to Clear Sight and started up the side of the rocky canyon. In fact, it was easier to climb than he'd expected. There were a lot of little crevices and nooks for him to dig his talons into, and the stone overall felt much sturdier than the webs he'd grown up clambering around on. At least the rocks didn't bounce and sway in the wind. And when he did stumble, losing his footing for a moment, he felt the strength of the webbing catch him, the strength of Swordtail, just above him, braced to save him before he fell. And Cricket was beside him the whole way, suggesting the easiest paths, pointing out places for him to rest. Not for the first time, Blue felt very, very grateful for his friends. Even though the climbing went well, it still seemed to take forever. It was a really deep hole, after all. Blue's whole body was aching before he was halfway up. He found himself daydreaming wistfully about honey drops and tiny sugar bees and silk hammocks. And when at last Cricket said, "It's here. It's just above you." He looked up and saw that the sky was already pale gray and most of the stars had disappeared. Cricket was right. They were near the top, and he'd be able to climb out early the next night, if he wasn't caught by then. With one last heave, he hauled himself onto the ledge next to Cricket, letting Swordtail lift him with the webbing. He sprawled there, breathing hard, and wondering if his legs would ever work again. Swordtail poked his head over the rim of the sinkhole and squinted in the direction of Wasp Hive.
"I don't see anyone yet," he said, flying back to them. "But you should still get hidden, to be safe."
"Back here." Cricket flicked her tail at the rippling stone of the rock wall. Blue crawled over and saw how the bend of the rock and the dangling plants hid a narrow crack, just big enough for him to squeeze through. He was amazed that Cricket had even found it in the first place. She held the green leaves aside so he could wedge himself in, and he discovered that the crack extended into the rock, like a small cave, so he could go farther in, squishily turn around, and lie down. Cricket poked her head in and watched him settle. "Do you want company? Which would be kind of cramped. Or do you want the whole space, but alone?"
"Company," Blue said. If you don't mind."
"I don't mind, if you don't mind my wings in your face," she said. She wriggled back out to tail Swordtail, and Blue heard the whoosh of his friend's wing beats retreating back down to the safety of the lake cave. Then Cricket was wedging herself in through the gap, making little squeaking noises as she tried to keep her wings clear of the rough stones. Blue pressed himself back as far as he could, and after a minute, she managed to get all the way in and lie down facing him.
"Thank you for your delightful invitation," she said, in a pretend lordly voice, adjusting her glasses. "I adore what you've done with the place. I'll be expecting tea and sliced avocados, of course."
Blue put his chin on his talons and chuckled.
"Don't make me think about food."
"I can't stop thinking about food," she said. "I'm starving. Those fish I caught for breakfast were so small and super weird. Did you see that they didn't have eyes? Oh, right, I showed you. Fish with no eyes. Do you think that's because there's no light down there? I guess I wouldn't rather eat something with eyes. But you should have tried them anyway. I could have caught more."
"That's all right,"
Blue said with a smile. I can wait for something in the vegetable family.
Cricket studied him. What will you do with Luna? She asked. I mean, if you can set her free, where will you go? Queen Wasp isn't going to stop looking for you.
I have no idea, Blue said slowly.
Honestly, he'd been imagining getting Luna and going home to their mothers. A part of him still felt as though this was a big misunderstanding, and if he could only convince Queen Wasp of how harmless they were, she'd let them go back to their normal lives.
I wish we could do that. Why can't there be a way? Although, would it ever feel the same? Now that I know about the flame silks and the mind control, would we ever feel safe again?
Maybe you could go live in the caves with the reading monkeys, Cricket said, with a dreamy smile in her voice, as though she was making a joke, but actually thought that sounded amazing.
That one we saw did look very welcoming, Blue laughed, in a stabby kind of way.
But I'd go farther away if I were you, she said. As far from Queen Wasp as you can.
Like one of the peninsulas? He asked. I thought they were too dangerous for dragons.
That's what we're told, Cricket said, nodding. But maybe it's not true.
Blue wasn't so sure. He'd seen drawings of some of the plants in the poison jungle, and they certainly looked as if they'd be happy to eat a few dragons, or impale some dragons, or melt some dragons and convert their bone sludge into nutrients.
You could go farther than that, though, Cricket said hesitantly.
I could, he said. How?
Maybe across the ocean, she said. He stared at her with wide eyes. Her body blocked most of the dim light from outside, so he couldn't really see the expression on her face. Was she joking?
Are you joking? He asked. The distant kingdoms aren't real.
The tilt of her head said she was puzzled. Of course they are. That's where Clearsight came from.
Yes, but... But Clearsight was magic.
Blue had always imagined the Night Black Seer Dragon as a mythological figure, like a star becoming a dragon and flying down to visit them.
We say she came from the distant kingdoms, but we might as well say she came from the moons or the sky.
The moons and the sky are real places too, Cricket pointed out.
Not places we can go, he protested.
But we could go to the distant kingdoms, Cricket said. I'm sure of it. It's just another big island, somewhere out to the east, full of other dragons. He stared at her silhouette, thinking of how different their educations had been. At Silkworm Hall, he'd learned to revere Clearsight and accept the wisdom she'd passed down in the book without question. He'd never been taught to think of her as a regular dragon like him, from a normal kingdom like his.
Other dragons like Clearsight? He asked. Is it a whole continent full of dragons who can see the future?
I don't know, Cricket said. Maybe. Wouldn't it be so interesting to find out? Can you imagine being the first dragons to cross the ocean in thousands of years? I mean, what kinds of tribes live over there? Do they look like us? Do they have other powers? Do they have reading monkeys?
But if it is real, and it's that easy to get there, Blue argued, then Clearsight wouldn't be the only one to have done it in all that time.
He shook his head.
I think it's a myth.
I think it's the perfect place to hide if Queen Wasp is looking for you, Cricket said. But you're right. That it wouldn't be easy to get there. We'd have to find out how Clearsight did it.
Magic, Blue said promptly.
Cricket leaned forward and bopped his nose with hers. Magic is just science we don't understand yet, she said. So maybe we can figure out her science.
How exactly?
he asked. With books? Cricket said, as though that was obvious. There must be clues in a book somewhere. He unfurled his antennae, sensing danger, and put one of his talons over hers. Shh. There were sounds coming from outside. Chapter 16. Blue and Cricket waited in tense silence. Wingbeats. Voices. A whoosh, and then a cracking sound, like an antelope's neck being broken, and munching noises as it was devoured. Blue shivered.
Who said you could eat?
Said one of the voices, deep and sharp and female.
I didn't eat all day yesterday,
another voice answered, whiny and male.
You know, she never lets us while she's in control. So I figure, as long as we're out here and in charge of our own skulls for once, we can hunt breakfast and run away silkwings at the same time.
The other hivewing growled, but there was a noise of ripping meat, as though she'd taken a chunk of the prey for herself.
This is a waste of time, she muttered, chewing. Who cares about one stupid dragonette who might or might not have fire in his silk? He probably got eaten by a pack of lions, or fell down a hole and died already. A hole like this one?
The voices drew nearer, and Blue felt Cricket's wings trembling.
Should we check down there?
Ugh,
said the first dragon.
My patrol went down there yesterday. It's dark and wet and haunted. I think we can skip it. Hello!
The second dragon shouted down the chasm, making Blue jump.
Hello, annoying wingless dragon. Are you dead at the bottom of these rocks? Or almost dead? Could you croak, yeah, I'm here, totally dead, carry on, so we can all go home and say we found you?
His companion actually laughed, which was the most surprising part of the conversation so far from Blue's point of view.
Come on, finish your intestines so we can get going, she said. There are some scrub thickets over by Tetsy Hive that I think are worth checking out.
It felt like a long time, and a lot of chewing noises later, when they finally flew away. Blue let out a breath and wondered how long he'd been holding it. His limbs were aching and heavy from the long night of climbing, and now that the danger had passed, he felt his eyelids drooping. It seemed safe enough to sleep. If anyone found him, he couldn't exactly escape in a hurry anyhow. He rested his chin on the ground and closed his eyes and slept. Blue slept for most of the day, drifting in and out when there were sounds of the hunt overhead. But each time he woke, Cricket was there, and he felt safe enough to sleep again. At last she nudged him awake, and they squeezed out of the hidden crevice onto the ledge outside. The sky was just turning purple-blue, and a few stars were out. Blue stretched out all his cramped muscles while Cricket flew down to get Swordtail. After that, it took only a little more climbing before he reached the top of the sinkhole and scrambled onto safe, flat ground. It was strange how dry it felt up here, after the dampness of the deep cave. Dust billowed up between his claws as he cut off the silk harness and threw it down the hole. Now that he wasn't flying, though, Wasp Hive looked horribly far away. Could they possibly make it there before dawn? Even if they did, would there be anywhere else to hide as safe as the sinkhole?
I'll scout ahead, Swordtail called, soaring away.
His deep blue wings were soon swallowed up by the night, and all Blue could see of him were the little flickers of white along his back, like a flurry of snow moths. Cricket landed to walk beside Blue, between the tufts of grass and stabby little thorn bushes. He glanced down at his talons and realized that a lot of the paint had flaked off, probably from wading in the lake and scraping against the rocks. His real colors were showing through all over his body, glints of aquamarine and violet shimmering like buried jewels. They went as fast as they could, although sometimes they had to detour around particularly dense shrubs or anthills as big as they were. At one point, a scorpion ran across Blue's foot, and he nearly shrieked, but managed not to. The air was full of buzzing and zipping, and the tall grass rustled as snakes glided out of their way. Two of the moons were full. The other was barely a sliver behind a veil of clouds. Cricket tipped her head back to look up at them.
"Did you see the comet about half a year ago?" she asked. "The one that looked like an extra moon in the sky? It was so big. I wished so much that I had a telescope to study it with, but there's only one in Cicada Hive, and Lady Scarab won't lend it to anyone."
"You know Lady Scarab?"
Blue asked. "You know Lady Scarab?" she replied skeptically.
"No, we ran into her, in the Sugar Dream, early on Luna's Metamorphosis Day. She was... I feel like nice is the wrong word, but she was sort of fiercely not awful to us."
"That sounds like her," Cricket said ruefully. "Fiercely not awful." Blue sensed there was more to Cricket's connection with the old dragon, but she didn't seem to want to talk about it. He changed the subject to astronomy, and they happily discussed constellations and her theories about other planets until Blue realized they were reaching the outskirts of Wasp Hive. They crested a small hill and studied the structures laid out below them. Wasp Hive was not quite like the other hives. It was bigger, for one thing, and the oldest hive on Pantala, so it was built in a heavier, more ornate style. There were carvings of cruel-eyed wasps adorning the entrances, brandishing the wealth of the hive in their excess wood and onyx inlays. An enormous marble statue of Queen Wasp loomed over the ground floor doors, so anyone entering that way would have to pass under her merciless gaze. But most dragons would enter at a higher level. Blue glanced up at the moonlit webs twining overhead. He could see the dark forms of Silkwing family clusters up there. Hundreds of sleeping dragons, like stones seen through water. Did any of them know about flame silks? Did any of them help imprison and feed dragons, like Luna and his father? And did they hate it every day? Or was it just a normal job to them? He wondered if the chrysalis extended across hives, and whether any of them were in it. All around the hive were neatly laid out rows of enormous greenhouses, at least 30 of them, in concentric circles surrounding the base of the hive. Some were wild with growth, leaves rioting against the glass roofs. Others were quieter, with orderly rows of vegetables and soil boxes visible inside. That many greenhouses. So much glass.
"She needed fire to make that glass to build these," Blue thought. "Fire she took from Silkwings. From my dad."
Flame silk was necessary to everything the queen did. She wasn't going to let them go easily. Soratel landed softly beside them.
"The main door is barred for the night, and possibly guarded inside as well. There's no way in there."
He tipped his head back to study the hive. "Let's think. Could we climb to one of the ledges?" Cricket asked, using the vines and your silk for Blue. Blue eyed the smooth walls of the hive uncertainly. It looked like a much more treacherous climb than the one out of the sinkhole, and the nearest opening was a very long way up.
"Or," he said slowly, "could we hide in one of the greenhouses? At least until we know a little more?"
"That's a good point," Cricket said. "If we go into the hive, we might get trapped in there. And it might not even be the right place to look, right? But if we find a place to hide, tomorrow I can go in and ask around about where the flame silks might be." Blue gave her an alarmed look.
"By yourself?"
"Of course," she said. "You two are probably all over the wanted posters by now. But who cares about me? I'm just a hive wing, doing normal hive wing things."
"Like suddenly appearing in a hive that's not your own?" Blue said.
asking obvious questions about the very thing that's got the queen running dragon hunts all over the savannah.
They won't be obvious questions, Cricket objected. They will be very subtle. I am an exceptionally subtle dragon, sir.
Hmm, Blue said dubiously.
Besides, it won't be suspicious because everyone will be talking about flame silks right now, she pointed out, and someone has to know where they are.
Swordtail was shaking his head. That's another day wasted, he said. Luna's only going to be in her cocoon 5 days. We have to find her before she comes out, and before Blue starts his own metamorphosis.
Blue twitched, startled. His own metamorphosis. Swordtail was right. That was soon. Very, very soon.
Where am I supposed to have my metamorphosis if I can't go back to the cocoon? And how can I help Luna if I'm stuck inside my own silk?
I say we storm the hive right now, Swordtail went on. I fly in, start knocking over guards, force them to tell me where she is.
I'd call that a splendid plan, Cricket said, if it resembled a plan in any way.
You'll end up on the wasp hive version of Misbehavior's Way before the sun is over the horizon, Blue agreed.
And the wasp hive version might be more like Headless Corpse's Way, Cricket added.
Swordtail stamped his feet. I can't sit around all day again.
We are not sitting around, Cricket said. We are spying and gathering information and thinking. You'd be surprised what a useful step that is when it comes to plans. She started down the hill toward the greenhouses, and the two silkwings followed her, Swordtail grumbling under his breath. Blue felt guilty for being on Cricket's side. Of course, he wanted to rescue Luna just as much as Swordtail did, but he didn't want to fight any guards, or demand answers, or rush in all teeth bared. He kind of wanted to do whatever would get him in the least trouble that would also help Luna. The greenhouses were all the same size, which was remarkably large, and divided from one another by neat gravel paths. Stakes with signs and arrows printed on them pointed the way to particular types of plants, and a list was affixed to the door of each greenhouse. Carrots, beans, eggplants, on one. Clementines, limes, on another. Papyrus, bamboo, on a third. They avoided the greenhouses that were too tidy, where every corner was visible, and headed for the ones that looked the most overgrown.
These are probably tended every day, Blue realized, as they walked between the towering glass walls.
He was starting to feel anxious about his plan.
Gardeners will come in to water the plants and find us.
I will bonk them and conk them out, Swordtail declared.
Poor dragons. Just trying to do their jobs and take care of some plants. They don't deserve a day of being knocked unconscious, plus a massive headache, Blue thought.
Well, said his brain unexpectedly.
You don't deserve to be chased across the savannah and treated like a mass murderer, so perhaps there's a little unfairness to go around.
He wrinkled his forehead, thinking about that. Did their injustice toward him mean that he'd be justified in hurting them? He wasn't the kind of dragon who ever hurt other dragons, but he could imagine what Luna would say. You're allowed to fight back. You should, when the world is like this. Look, Cricket whispered, pointing to one of the last greenhouses in the innermost circle near the back of the hive. The plant growth inside was dense and leafy, but what was even more interesting was the fact that the door was covered with a silk-spun web barrier. They crossed to it and read the sign beside the door. Do not enter, by order of Queen Wasp. Property of the Queen. Trespassing punishable by maiming, dismemberment, impaling, and death, in that order. Blue lightly tapped the silk with one of his claws, and the threads vibrated.
This is here, so she'll know if anyone tries to break in.
Can you recreate it? Cricket asked Swordtail. From inside? Seems like a perfect place to hide if no one can come in here.
Except, you know, Queen Wasp, Blue pointed out.
Yeah, but she probably won't, Cricket guessed.
This sign is really clear, though, Blue said anxiously. No trespassing at all. Maiming and impaling and death. I mean, this sign seems to think it's a really serious rule.
I think keep Blue safe from brainwashed hive wings is a more serious rule, Cricket said firmly.
Yeah, I can do this, said Swordtail, who'd been studying the web. It might not be an exact match, but it should look convincing enough from a distance.
As Blue watched nervously, Swordtail carefully dismantled the web enough for Cricket to open the door. She stepped inside and let out a small gasp. It's really hot in here, she whispered back to them. How does she keep it this hot?
I have a guess, Swordtail hissed.
He scowled at the silk spiraling out of his wrists as he started reweaving the door cover. Blue squeezed in behind Cricket and felt the humidity hit him along with several flapping wet leaves. It was like walking into a storm cloud. He glanced down and wondered if the stone floor was lined with flame silk to keep it this temperature. Why do you think Queen Wasp keeps everyone out of here? Cricket whispered to him. Do any of these plants look unusual to you? I recognize some of them, but not all of them. Huh. She brushed his shoulder with her wing, and they moved farther into the tangle of greenery.
That was a good question, Blue realized,
one he hadn't thought about because he was so tangled up in anxiety about breaking the rules. What was in here that Queen Wasp wanted to keep secret? Why was this place so forbidden? Now he could see that there were beds of dirt edged with boulders and something like a path between them. But the plants had grown so wild that they vaulted over the paths, twined their branches together, and flung down curtains of hanging moss and trailing vines to disrupt any possible order. He and Cricket had to duck and weave through the greenery, and he kept getting his claws snagged on roots and unexpected runners. There were flowers everywhere, too. Glorious purple exploding stars, delicate pale orange orchids, clusters of petals the color of bananas, and odd little globes in ruby red and sapphire blue. What are these? Cricket whispered, mostly to herself, fingering a vine of bright pink tendrils. And those? Why haven't we studied these? How did she get these two to grow next to each other? Whoa, is that a new kind of fern? She wandered ahead, murmuring questions, while Blue stopped to watch a really surprisingly cute snail sauntering slowly up a tree trunk. Suddenly, Cricket's voice cut off with a shriek that was quickly muffled. Blue's head jerked up. Was Queen Wasp here, inside the greenhouse? Had she caught Cricket? He ran after her, stumbling as he fought through vine tangles and got smacked in the face by 80 more large wet leaves. He had to explain to the queen that none of this was Cricket's fault. He had to turn himself in. He pushed through a curtain of moss and felt himself seized by strong claws. They threw him to the floor, flipped him onto his back, and tied all his talons together before he could even blink. He opened his mouth to yell for Cricket, and another vine immediately looped around his snout, snapping his jaw shut. It felt as if barely a moment had passed, but there he was, lying on the ground, completely helpless. Blue craned his neck to look for Cricket and spotted her, tied up the same way he was and propped against a tree. Standing over her was a wiry dark green dragon.
So, not Queen Wasp, he thought. Could that be the Silkwing who covers the door for her?
He tried to twist around to see his own attacker and realized there were three of them all together. All of them had scales in shades of dark green, and they were all poised and waiting to catch Swordtail, who was blundering toward the noise Blue and Cricket had made. And then, Blue noticed something. Their captors. They had two wings each, not four. Long, graceful, swooping wings, shaped like leaves. Chapter 17.
Leaf wings.
They weren't extinct. They were here, in Queen Wasp's greenhouse, attacking dragons. Real, actual leaf wings. The posters were right.
I should alert a hive wing authority immediately, Blue thought,
feeling a little hysterical.
But I can't, because they'll arrest me. But leaf wings, this close to Wasp Hive.
He tried to grunt loudly to warn Swordtail, but it didn't do any good. The trio of leaf wings moved with ruthless efficiency, and within a few heartbeats, Swordtail was tied up next to Blue, blinking with similar bewilderment.
Are there any more? One of them asked.
I'll check,
said another, and he quietly melted off into the trees. There was a long moment of silence. Blue glanced over at Cricket again. She was watching the leaf wings with the same wide-eyed expression she'd had when she saw the reading monkey in the cave.
This is not an exciting scientific discovery, Cricket, he wanted to shout. These are very dangerous dragons.
The leaf wings had tried to wipe out both their tribes in the last war. Wasn't she deathly afraid of them? He tried to look at the leaf wings with Cricket's eyes. Maybe he would be less scared that way. Maybe he just needed to see them as fascinating and unusual, instead of deadly and really extremely deadly. The two that had stayed were both female, and their faces were similar enough that he wondered if they were related. The one standing by Cricket looked no older than he was, about 6 years old, although he had no idea if leaf wings grew differently than silk wings. Small gold scales were speckled along the edges of her wings and talons and across her snout, crinkled up in her scowl. The other one was a lot older and bigger, with an air of authority about her that made Blue instinctively want to hide or say he was sorry, or both. Her scales were lighter green with patches of brown, and she had strange, pale burn scars splattered across her talons and up her forearms. Her scowl was also pretty terrifying. Both dragons had several small pouches hung about them, woven from long grass or fashioned from leaves. Blue wondered what was inside, but had a sinking feeling that he would regret finding out.
What are they thinking? He wondered.
The matching scowls were a pretty good clue that whatever it was, the general sentiment was hostile.
How long have they been here? What are they here for? Are they glad they caught us, or annoyed that we stumbled into their hiding place? Most important, what are they going to do with us?
The leaves rustled, and the male leaf wing returned. He was a green dark enough to disappear into shadows, and wore a small white seashell on a cord around his neck. He shook his head at the others.
No one else.
Good, said the older female. Did they break the web on the door?
Yes, he said, but rebuilt it.
Useful of them, she said.
Huh,
Blue thought, momentarily distracted from his panic.
How did the leaf wings get in? They can't spin silk, so they couldn't have covered the door themselves.
Could
Queen Wasp know they're here?
He doubted that. Queen Wasp hated leaf wings for refusing to accept her rule. Why would she keep three of them stashed in a greenhouse? Across from him, Cricket flicked her tail, trying to get the smaller leaf wing's attention, but the scowling dragonette ignored her. The tall female, who seemed to be the leader of the group, scanned her three captives with calculating green eyes. At last, she stepped forward and yanked the rope off Blue's snout.
"Ow!"
he yelped.
"Who are you?"
she demanded.
"And what are you doing here?"
She jerked her head at Cricket.
"Two silk wings with a hive wing? Do you work for her?"
"No," Blue said. "She's my friend."
The youngest leafwing let out a scornful laugh, but Blue's interrogator looked intrigued.
"Hive wings don't befriend silk wings," she said. "They control you. They enslave you. They order you about. But then, that's what you signed up for, isn't it?"
I, Blue said. "I didn't sign up for anything, I think."
"True," said the male leafwing. "Too young."
"Don't be so literal, Hemlock,"
the leader scoffed.
"You, tell me your names."
"I'm Blue," he said. "And that's Cricket. And that's..."
He trailed off as he turned to Swordtail and found him furiously shaking his head.
Someone else."
"Trying to keep secrets won't do any good at this point," the leafwing said. "I only see two ways for this to end, with you all helping us or dead. In the former case, it'll be much easier if we know your names. Or we could skip to the latter case right now."
Swordtail growled, and the little leafwing bared her teeth at him.
What are your names?"
Blue tried, thinking that was astonishingly brave of him. The leafwing smiled slightly.
"I'm Belladonna, and that's Hemlock. Our daughter is Sundew."
"Why would you tell them that?" Sundew snapped in a burst of fury. "They can't help us. They'll turn us in the moment they get a chance. We should kill them now, and leave their corpses somewhere that'll really scare those worms in the hive." She lifted one of her wings and pulled a fiery red centipede out of a pouch. It flailed violently at the air, waving all its feet and hissing.
"Sundew," Belladonna said warningly. "Save that for later. Corpses lying around will notify the queen we're here, which would make our mission harder. Remember?"
Sundew dropped the centipede back into its pouch. Her scowl deepened.
Besides, Blue said, "killing us would probably make the queen very happy, and I think maybe you don't want to do that?"
Belladonna narrowed her eyes at him.
"The queen wants you dead. Why?"
"Well," he said, but he'd never been a good liar, and he couldn't come up with anything fast enough, and he didn't know what the right thing to say might be. So he went with the truth.
"She wants me locked up, in case I'm a flame silk."
He held out his wrists, which looked as ordinary as ever, other than being covered in flaking paint.
"And she probably wants Swordtail dead, because he attacked some guards to save my sister, and then he escaped Cicada Hive. Cricket, she doesn't know about Cricket yet, I hope. But if she did, she'd be mad because Cricket's been helping us hide from her."
"A helpful hive wing?" Belladonna said thoughtfully.
She regarded Cricket in a way that made Blue think of quicksand and crawler vines at midnight.
"That does sound like a useful dragon to know."
"Sounds like a bunch of four-winged lies," Sundew spat. "If Queen Wasp wanted you locked up, you'd be locked up."
"Not necessarily. She wants your whole tribe dead, and apparently you're, not all that dead," Blue pointed out. "By the way, how are you not dead? Are there a lot of you left? Where have you been living?"
"None of your business," Sundew hissed. "As if we'd tell you anything, tree killers."
"Tree killers," Blue thought, startled.
What an awful name. Was that how Leafwings saw the other two tribes?
"Of course, it must be. After all, that's what we did."
"Even the Silkwings, though? The Silkwings only cut down trees under orders. Mostly they stayed out of the way as much as they could."
"But
But if I were a leaf wing, all I would see is hive wings destroying my home, and silk wings helping, or standing by.